27. The woods were dark and deep, but nobody would ever describe them as lovely. Jimmy had materialized a good distance away from his eventual goal and was spending his walking time preparing for what would happen when he reached it. Despite the difficulty that had marked the last 30 years of his existence, Jimmy knew that in many ways the most difficult part was still ahead of him. Directly ahead of him, in fact. Bicycling back to North America had been a matter of patience, persistence, and risk avoidance. Getting what he'd needed out of Martin's parents and the Treasury agents had just been straightforward social engineering, which had always been Jimmy's forte. The task Jimmy was starting now was more social engineering, but of a much higher difficulty level. If he pulled this off, it would be his proudest achievement. It was mid-afternoon, but the light was flat and gray. Jimmy walked through the decaying, lifeless forest and let his mind wander. He could have materialized at his destination and saved himself some effort, but he found that before attempting something difficult, it was helpful to take some time and think about anything else. Also, walking up on foot would be good showbiz. It would make him seem small and harmless, which was always a good approach when dealing with someone who wants to be seen as big and powerful. As he entered the clearing and saw the sacrificial pyre, the imposing cliff, and the cave that had been carved to look like a fearsome skull with its angry brow and its sharpened, elongated canines, he knew that he had chosen the right approach. Jimmy walked to the dormant sacrificial pyre in the center of the clearing. He sat his briefcase to the side, extended his arms as if praying to the cave, and bellowed,
"Oh, mighty wizard of the cave! I come to you in this, my hour of great need, in hopes that you might offer aid."
The cave remained dark and silent. Jimmy continued,
"In exchange for fair compensation, of course."
The skull's eyes burst to life, emitting gouts of fire that burned an unnatural blood red. The mouth spewed forth a thick red fog that rolled down the cliff and pooled in the clearing, quickly obscuring the ground from view. The cold, sacrificial pyre in front of Jimmy burst into flames. A thunderous voice echoed through the forest, so loud Jimmy felt it in his bones.
"Who dares to seek the assistance of the necromancer? What challenge do you face that could drive you to risk my wrath? And what did you mean by compensation?"
Jimmy dredged up his friendliest, most harmless-sounding tone of voice and said,
"I invite you to come and find out for yourself."
For a moment, the fire and fog continued to pour from the skull, but there was no sound and no other movement. Then, Jimmy barely made out a dark shape moving in the fog-filled cave mouth.
"That's it," Jimmy thought. "Take a little sneaky peek."
He didn't need Gary to recognize him at first. In fact, it would be better if he didn't. The sight of a 60-something-year-old man standing here in his medieval clearing, wearing a smart business suit and attempting to summon a necromancer, should be more than enough to whet his curiosity. Jimmy saw the dark shape moving in the cave get more distinct. Then he clearly made out a head in a pointed hat and an arm attempting to wave some of the red fog out of its way. One of the keys to persuading people is to get them to like you. One of the keys to getting people to like you is to behave like the kind of person your mark likes. People try to be likable, so they tend to act like the kind of person they like, which is a mistake, because they invariably get this act wrong. That's why acting exactly the way another person acts is a sure way to make that person dislike you. Jimmy knew that the key to making someone like him was not to act how that person acts, but to act like that person thinks they act. In Gary's case, that meant good-natured teasing that, unlike Gary's good-natured teasing, was demonstrably good-natured and actually amusing to someone other than the person doing the teasing. Jimmy said, in a proud voice,
"Your cave has fangs!"
Gary looked up at the sculpted teeth hanging down just above his head and said,
"It's a skull."
Jimmy asked,
"Is it a vampire skull?"
The mouth glowed with an eerie green light that, when combined with the red fog, made Jimmy think of Christmas. The glow enveloped the circumference of the cave opening and then dissipated. When Jimmy's eyes had readjusted, he saw that all of the teeth were now sharpened. The voice from the fog said,
"Is that better?"
"Yes,"
Jimmy said.
"Very necromantic."
Gary said,
"Who is that?"
He walked forward so that he was clear of the fog. Clearly, the sight of a gray-haired man in a suit did not alleviate his confusion. Jimmy stood still, hands at his sides, and said,
"Hello, Gary. It's good to see you."
Gary tilted his head to one side, then flew down, landing across the pyre from Jimmy. He looked at Jimmy in the dim gray light, clearly trying to place his face. Recognition hit him like a jolt of electricity, and in an instant he was pointing his staff like a rifle directly at Jimmy's face.
"Okay," Jimmy thought. "What emotions am I trying to communicate here?"
Jimmy was happy to be back, so he smiled. He knew that Gary wasn't happy that he was back, so he raised his eyebrows apologetically. He was being threatened, so he raised his hands, but he knew that Gary wouldn't just attack without warning, so he only raised them to head height. He knew that Gary had good reason to distrust him, so he bowed his head submissively. He knew that Gary was probably more scared than he was, so he kept his voice low and his tone friendly.
"You!"
Gary yelled.
"Yes,"
Jimmy said. Gary yelled,
"Shut up!"
Jimmy pursed his lips and nodded. Gary circled slowly, keeping his staff aimed at Jimmy's head. He nudged Jimmy's leather briefcase with his foot, then asked,
"What's in this?"
Jimmy spent half a second considering making a smart-aleck comment about how he was told not to talk, purely because that was what Gary would do in that situation. But he quickly decided that the non-threatening posture was more important than currying favor.
"My computer, and some socks and underwear," Jimmy said.
Gary considered this, then continued circling until he was behind Jimmy. He thought for a moment, then tucked his staff under his arm and frisked Jimmy quickly and inexpertly.
"Got a wand hidden on you somewhere?"
he asked.
"No, I'm unarmed. Even if I had a wand, I'm short a hat and robe, so the shell wouldn't obey my commands. Not that I'm in the shell anymore. We both know I had my privileges revoked."
Gary seemed satisfied. As he circled back around to Jimmy's front, Jimmy saw that instead of holding his staff like a rifle aimed at Jimmy's face, he pointed it from the hip in Jimmy's general direction. This, in Jimmy's life, was what passed for progress. Gary studied Jimmy for a long moment, then asked,
"How did you do it?"
"I mustn't sound angry," Jimmy thought. "I can sound happy to be here, sad for what I did, grateful that he's talking to me, but I can show no anger."
"How'd I manage to return?"
Jimmy said, clarifying and subtly reframing the question.
"It took 30 years and a great deal of effort."
"Why'd he come back?"
"Wouldn't you, Gary? Think about it. If you got kicked out of the shell and sent back to your time without file access, wouldn't you spend the rest of your life trying to return?"
Gary thought about this, then smiled and said,
"So we should have killed you."
"No anger,"
Jimmy reminded himself. He shrugged and made his eyes about 10% sadder, an amount he calculated to be noticeable without overselling it.
"I'm glad that you didn't, but I guess yes, Gary. If the goal was to make sure I'd never turn up again, then you should have killed me. I have to admit, I had it coming."
Gary raised the end of his staff slightly, as if readying himself to use it.
"And now you're here to kill us."
Jimmy fought a smile, which would have been just as damning as showing anger. He was delighted at how Gary had phrased that question. He hadn't said that Jimmy was here for revenge, or payback, or to give us what's coming to us, or any other ambiguous cliches. He'd made the delightfully concrete statement, "You're here to kill us." Jimmy could reply to that both directly and honestly, which was good. As Jimmy always said, the easiest way to keep people from thinking that you're lying is to not lie.
"No,"
Jimmy said in a firm tone of voice.
I'm not here to kill anybody. I'm done with that. I know that for you, that all just happened, but for me, it's been decades. I've had plenty of time to think about what I did and how you all reacted.
All true, Jimmy thought. Gary said, I don't believe you. Jimmy took this as more good news.
If he didn't believe me at all, he'd just hit me with the spell, call all the other wizards, and they'd either kill me or send me back to my time. But he didn't. He took the trouble to tell me that he doesn't believe me, which tells me that he doesn't totally disbelieve me either. Even if he's only 5% unsure, I can use it. It's a seed of doubt that'll grow into a tree of trust, which I can sit beneath for shade or cut down for lumber as I see fit.
You don't have to believe me, Jimmy said, his hands still raised to head height. I wouldn't ask you to after what I did. Look, we both know that I'm not in the shell, so there's only so much I can do, right? I only got back file access yesterday. You're the second person I visited. I've stopped my aging, set up time travel and teleportation, and expanded my bank account. But that's all. I have no weapons.
Jimmy risked lowering a hand to point at his briefcase.
My computer's right there. We can go into your cave. You can fire up my laptop and look for yourself.
Jimmy could see the wheels turning behind Gary's eyes. A question was coming. Jimmy thought about all of the possible things that might still be bugging Gary, and figured about a 90% chance that he would ask Jimmy why he'd come back here and not to some other time and place. Gary gave Jimmy a shrewd look and asked,
Why'd you come back here? Why not just go to some other time and place?
Good question, Jimmy said. I don't want to be a fugitive for the rest of my life, especially if I'm immortal. If I'd gone to some other time, I'd have to live in fear of one of you all finding me, and eventually you would. Naturally, you'd attack me and send me back to exile, if I was lucky. There's a good chance you'd just kill me and be done with it. Now, the only way for me to have peace is to come back here to the scene of the crime and...
Jimmy chose his next words very carefully.
Try to make things right.
Jimmy, you killed a town, a whole town, and when we told you that you shouldn't have, you tried to kill us.
Jimmy said,
Yes, I know. I'm not saying that I can ever truly make things right, but Gary, I have to try.
Gary said nothing. Jimmy slowly lowered his hands.
We can just go inside. You can look at my computer. You know you'll be able to see exactly what powers I have and what powers I don't. Then I'll tell you what I plan to do. If you disapprove, you can easily incapacitate me and call everyone else to come and decide what to do with me. And I don't mean that I'll let you incapacitate me. We both know that I wouldn't be able to stop you.
Gary thought, let out a long sigh, then rolled his eyes and gestured with his staff, indicating the cave mouth. Jimmy picked up his briefcase and said,
Thank you, Gary. Thank you so much.
He meant it. He'd never been more grateful in his life.
He's willing to listen to reason, Jimmy thought. That means that as long as I can keep coming up with reasons, he'll keep listening.